Hi, this is Joshua Redman, and you're listening to Helen Simons on Jazz Express.
My special guest on Jazz Express is the double Grammy-nominated Joshua Redman. He is one of the most acclaimed American jazz artists of his generation and is considered as the new giant of the tenor saxophone. Joshua joins me from his home in California to talk about his two latest albums, Trios Live, due out on June the 17th, and Walking Shadows, released last year. Local jazz fans are very excited about his upcoming visit to Australia for the International Melbourne Jazz Festival on June the 6th. Joshua, thank you for joining me today. It's an honour and a pleasure to welcome you to Jazz Express. Last year, Nonesuch, your new label, released Walking Shadows, comprising 12 ballads. It was your first recording to include an orchestral ensemble of 15 players. How did you go about selecting this collection of both vintage and contemporary ballads for this Jazz with Strings concept album? Like, what was the starting point and inspiration?
Sure. Well, first let me say thank you, Helen. It's an honor and a pleasure for me to speak with you, and I'm so thrilled about the opportunity to come back to Australia. I don't get to go there very often, and I always have a fantastic time. I think the Australian audiences are terrific, and we're really looking forward to playing there. As far as Walking Shadows, you know, that I feel like that album has been a long time coming. I mean, I thought about doing a ballads album around the time I started doing albums. I mean, I always loved the idea of doing a record that was really dedicated to softer music, to slower music, to a really lyrical and melodic and romantic way of playing. It was something that I've always loved playing ballads, and I always wanted to do a ballads record, but I don't think I felt ready to do one until recently. And I guess about 3 or so years before we actually recorded Walking Shadows, I started working with Brad Meldow, the producer and also the pianist and one of my favorite musicians on the planet. We started working together on song selection and just, you know, kind of figuring out what might work. And we tossed a bunch of ideas back and forth. And we ended up with this set of music. And we had a lot of decisions to make about where we were going to use strings and what sort of instrumentation we would use on different songs. And I do feel the orchestra, the small orchestra, the strings and winds add something to these songs, and they really, you know, they change the way we play as a quartet, and they enhance the music, I think, in certain places and bring a certain elegance to it and a certain richness. But first and foremost, I don't see this as a with strings record. I see it as a ballads record that has strings on some tracks.
And the ballads include beautiful selections from the Great American Songbook, including Easy Living, one of my favourites, Lush Life, Strayhorn's Lush Life, Stardust, The Folks Who Live on the Hill. But then you depart and you touch on the classical side with Bach Adagio from his organ Toccata in C, to The Beatles' Let It Be, and of course John Mayer's number Stop This Train, to this very sort of rock-based New York indie blonde redheads track, Dolly's Mind. I mean, was this these counterpoints, these contrasts, were they the exciting things for you to get into with this whole exercise, this whole process?
Well, not specifically. I mean, you know, I wasn't trying to make any statement about repertoire in selecting, repertoire from, very dissimilar sources. I mean, you know, sure, it was exciting to try to, come up with a compelling, rendition of these songs, which aren't considered jazz standards. But it was equally exciting to try to tackle songs like The Folks Who Live on the Hill and Stardust and Lush Life, you know. For me, I've always felt that at least conceptually, in terms of repertoire, nothing need be off limits, you know. Now, I don't go searching for pop tunes just for the sake of playing pop tunes, you know, for mm-hmm. for more contemporary pop tunes, but I do feel like it's fair game if I can find a song that I connect with and that I feel works for a particular project, and then I think will inspire a certain group of musicians to play in a certain way, and then inspire me. I'll go for it. And in this particular instance, I think we were able to come up with at least for us meaningful approaches to all of these songs, whether they were jazz standards or more modern rock and pop songs.
Mm-hmm. You've been very prolific in the last few years. I mean, in fact, in the last 12 months, you've gone from recording with a relatively large ensemble of musicians to a stripped back group of hardworking jazz musicians, keeping it real in the trio form. We come to now Nonesuch Records releasing your latest album, Trios Live, on June the 17th. Now, this was recorded across two venues at New York City's Jazz Standard and Washington's D.C.'s Blues Alley. Tell us something about how this recording came about.
This is a recording that, it's kind of a document. I thought it was important to capture, a side of, an aspect of the trio sound, and also a kind of aspect of my playing that can't be captured in the studio. I'd done one live record before, Spirit of the Moment, which I think was released in 95 or something like that. It's been a long time since I've released a live record. I think my playing and definitely the approach of the trio, and I've been working with trio for almost 10 years, has changed a lot over that time. And I think we really developed something. And there's a certain, freewheeling exuberance, a certain intensity, a certain energy, a certain freedom that I think we can only have live. And I thought I wanted to represent that. These recordings weren't made originally for the sake of making this record. I just wanted to, at various times over touring trio, we've had the opportunity to record, and I thought it was would be nice to have some of that, for the vaults. I mean, for the very least, for our own personal reference. But, at a certain point, I started kind of combing through that material and seeing if I could find tracks that I thought were particularly representative, and also tracks that I felt were maybe particularly unique, that there was something special about the way we played the song, some sort of spark or magic that happened. I came up with this selection of material, which I thought it was important for me to kind of represent that part of my musical journey. So we selected those songs.
I read somewhere in part that you said this recording was dedicated to fans and people who come to support live jazz and this whole sort of support network that happens within the jazz community. Is there something to this?
Well, I wrote a little something, for the album, that I included in the, that I think we're including in the packaging, which is just kind of a little testament, an expression of gratitude to jazz audiences, and their, not only their support for the music, but just their participation in the music. I feel that as I said, there's something unique about playing live. I mean, I think that's true across the board for, all musicians, but especially with jazz, because jazz is an improvised music, because it's a music where you're really playing what you feel and what you experience in the moment. So the audience becomes so central to that. Whether they're, responding in an obvious way, but they can be central to that even if they're listening even if they're very reserved and they're not expressing themselves vocally, there's still a feeling that you get from playing for them and playing with them, in fact. And, I think all jazz musicians. I mean, I love doing studio albums, and I think there's something special that you can about the focus and discipline and intimacy that you can have in a studio setting and really trying to craft the songs in a certain way. But I think, you know, our bread and butter as jazz musicians is live performance, and we couldn't do that without the audience, without their presence and their participation.
Well, I'm sure you're going to get a great response at the International Melbourne Jazz Festival. What can the audience expect to hear from this all-star quartet that you're bringing to Australia?
Well, I think that they're going to hopefully hear some good music. You know, I mean, this is a band that plays with a lot of fire and a lot of passion and a lot of, it's a very soulful band. It's a very fun band. I mean, we play all different sorts of music, all different, you know, I mean, we'll definitely play some stuff, some ballads from Walking Shadows, but, you know, we'll also play some swaying tunes, some more complex, odd meter tunes. But, you know, there's a real, it's a dynamic band, and I think it'll be a dynamic set. In terms of what the specific repertoire will be, what people should expect song-wise, I have no idea. I don't know what to expect. I tend to call tunes on the bandstand, especially with a group like this where we've got such a large book of material to draw from and everybody knows the music and everybody loves to just, I think we all relish that element of surprise that makes jazz so exciting.
Absolutely. Joshua Redmond, thank you for joining me, Helen Simons, on Jazz Express.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Hi, this is Joshua Redmond, and you're listening to Helen Simons on Jazz Express.